Human Resources and Employment Law Tips and Advice in association with the HRSuite.com.
Yes, indeed. Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite joining us in line to talk human resources. If you have any work-related questions, employer or employee-related questions, get them into us now on any of our numbers. And Caroline, we're going to start this week with the idea and the whole area of remote working. It's taken off to a large extent in this country. However, some of the bigger corporations and companies around the world, like Google and Facebook and others, are issuing their employees with return to work temporarily offers, saying we need you in work 3 days a week or 2 days a week to people who haven't been coming back into the office. Is this a new phase in it now? Maybe a retrenchment in the idea of remote working?
Indeed it is. And the interesting thing, I suppose, is it's companies like Zoom who are obviously promoting themselves as being able to work remotely just as easily using their technology, and Amazon and, you know, companies like that that have issued not just a request but more of an enforcement to say if people don't come back into the office the 2 to 3 days a week that they've requested, that it's going to impact their performance bonus, it's going to impact their interview review, etc. So there's a big shift to, I suppose, encourage a strong hybrid approach rather than a fully remote approach in a lot of these companies we're seeing at the moment.
And that's a change. But does that require then, or I suppose it depends on the terms of the contract, that it's flexible in terms of where they work from, or when the company's able to step in and say, I want to see more of you in the office 3 days a week,
yeah,
or something?
Absolutely, absolutely. And for a lot of companies, they've implemented a remote working policy where they've recruited people fully remotely. So the option is not like part, you know, in the office and part at home. But for many contracts, they've been a remote or a hybrid that just kind of evolved since COVID, and a lot of those companies have started, you know, to get people to come back into the office on a part-time basis at least.
Yeah, and that is the situation. All this is happening, Caroline, in the context, I suppose, of people scrambling for staff and to hire people, and shortages everywhere you look. Is that still going on in a full employment economy that we have?
It is, without doubt, and arguably, I suppose, Gerry, this probably goes against the concept of, you know, having a wider talent pool, because if you require people to be in the office 2 to 3 days a week, that means that somebody can't work in Kerry or live in Kerry and work from a business in Dublin unless they choose to commute for 3 days, which I appreciate some people will choose to do, but I think it's going to encourage people to reassess, you know, the type of work environment. For a lot of people, they're delighted with hybrid. They're delighted being able to have the best of both worlds by having some days at home, because it definitely suits. People avoid the commute. They've got the work-life balance. And I think most organisations have started to train their staff and train their managers on how do we actually maximise productivity during remote, because it's no good kind of saying, well, look, it's not working and we want everybody to come back. We know that the future of work is going to be hybrid, so we need to start, I suppose, embracing how do we manage that better.
Okay, and implications there for employers and how they manage it as well. Speaking of that, we figures out, Caroline, this week showing Ireland has surged in terms of residence permits issued to non-nationals. Now, a good portion of that is education, but also, I'd imagine, it's employers looking to employ people from abroad or looking further afield to get employees across the range of things such as health as well as hospitality.
Absolutely, and I suppose there's a huge request to ease the, I suppose, complex process of applying for work permits and also to expand the critical skills. And we expect in the foreseeable future that that will happen. So, for example, craft-type workers like bakers, etc., can't be got, and there's a huge need to reassess that. But I was talking to a business in Killarney this morning, and again, they're in the hospitality type of business, and they're just really tight on staff. And again, it's what can you do better and different to be the employer of choice? It's becoming harder and harder when, I suppose, money is one factor, but flexibility is another. And, you know, there really is a huge battle to get staff. So getting people on work permits is really an important you know, tool to be able to use to expand that talent pool. And I do think we're going to see more opportunity for that to expand. But we need to simplify the process too. You know, it's a really complex, drawn-out process, you know, to go through that. So hopefully we'll see improvements in that in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and with that in mind, in terms of shortages, do employers have to be conscious that if they lose staff and can't replace them, obviously the workload will fall on other staff, that increases the pressure on them?
I think more than that, even, Gerry, now we're seeing that people are trying to identify different ways of working, like, and looking at reduced opening hours and reduced service delivery. So, you know, there's a lot more, if you look around in any of the businesses that we see, there's a lot more self, for example, serve checkouts. We're seeing, you know, checking into hotels is becoming, you know, you're not going to have the same level of staff that you would meet ordinarily. There's, you know, restriction on opening hours. People are reviewing the business model to try and see how they can address the staff shortages, but also, I suppose, the increasing costs linked to labour and trying to have staff available for the jobs that are really adding value rather than a job maybe that isn't necessarily doing that. So, like, for a lot of clients, they're upskilling people to, you know, be better at sales and be better at customer service, etc. So the customer's really seeing that additional value rather than there being jobs that could potentially be replaced simply because the staff aren't available.
And are people in hospitality or employers having to do things like maintain some level of payment or some level of contact with their staff at the end of a season between this and next season so that they're not starting from scratch next March looking for staff, Caroline?
I think for a lot of people, they have seasonal work available for those that want it. So, you know, for summer people who might be in college, if they want it, I do think there's most businesses have work available for them. There's also a new program that's just been launched with Fault Ireland, which is encouraging transition year students to consider hospitality as a career. So I think people are thinking outside the box as much as possible to try and fill the gap. But because of seasonality, I suppose, it suits some people really well. But for a lot of others, it's a real challenge to maintain that momentum.
There you go, Caroline. We're going to leave it there for a moment. We'll get back to more questions and queries from listeners. If you have a question of what Caroline said in relation to that element of working, then do get in touch with us. We have a query to get to in regards to that and more to get to as well. Get them into us on any of our numbers. We'll have more with Caroline after we take these.
Human Resources and Employment Law Tips and Advice in association with the HRSuite.com.
Yeah, we're talking work and human resources with Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite. And Caroline, we have a query in here from a listener in relation to remote working who says that their boss or their employer isn't cooperating or responding to requests for a discussion about the possibility of remote working. What are the options open to this person?
So there's new legislation coming down the tracks. It's not enacted yet, but we have the bill, so we know exactly what's coming. And people will have the option to request remote working. Anybody has that option to request it, and the employer is obliged to come back to you within a specific time. And then there's also the option for those with family and caring responsibilities. They're going to have the option to request any form of flexible working. So it can be hybrid, it can be different hours, etc. And again, the employer is obliged to try and see if they can facilitate same in line with whatever the type of job it is. So ultimately, that employee currently has no legal setting in terms of from an employer as to what they have to do, but that is coming in the coming months into law.
Okay, another query in here from an employer this time who's having trouble with an employee who isn't performing very well, not interacting well with others on their team as well. It has been raised in an informal way, but the employee's performance hasn't improved. What options are open to this employer in terms of next steps? And I'd imagine, Karen, this involves the process or an internal disciplinary process which would need to have been set out in advance, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and like I suppose I'm always a believer that as much as possible, if you can nip issues in the bud and have, I suppose, you know, a lot of the time we say psychic communication and psychic management doesn't work, where you might presume that the person knows that they're not performing to the required standard, but we actually haven't sat them down, you know, explained where they're going wrong, ask what support they need, because sometimes it's actually as simple as, you know, trying to identify maybe there's a program on the system that they're really struggling with, or maybe they're just really not managing their time, or, you know, we just, I think by having a meaningful discussion with a view to trying to nip things in the bud. And I suppose the next step for me then, if that doesn't work, is a performance improvement plan. So you're meeting the person weekly with milestones and with targets and with, you know, specific things they need to be achieving, because again, that generally does have very good success, and only at a last resort are you going to go to disciplinary. Obviously, if somebody is new to the company, they're on probation, which means that they're on that trial period, but again, that's a maximum of 6 months. So again, it's all about making sure that you're giving really good, clear feedback, and sometimes we're not great at that. We've good intentions, but we kind of presume a lot rather than actually having the conversations, and that's where we fall down.
And look, from that point of view, it reminds me of a story I read this week from the Workplace Relations Commission, Caroline, and these can be handy to give people an indication as to what to do and not to do in their own situations. This was a hair salon owner who sacked the barber because, among other matters, he claimed the worker would not sweep up as he was told it was a woman's job. Now, in the end, the salon owner had to pay €750 for unfair dismissal, but the barber admitted that he had made some sexist comments and other issues, but were not intended to be taken seriously and were made in jest. And one of the points that you made there in relation to the adjudication was that the Workplace Place Commission, that it's clear the respondent was very frustrated by the complainant's conduct, and he confirmed at the hearing that he had made sexist comments. However, more work should have been done. Some element of formal engagement should have been made if they moved to dismiss the worker. So that's that process you're talking about there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like, if you know it's going to go down the road that this is really not working after you've done all the things we've spoke about already, then at that stage you're now invoking your disciplinary procedure and your policies. And
yeah, like they never sat him down, they never put the complaints to him, they never said, this is what happened, this is an issue, we need to work together to resolve this if we can. None of that happened.
No, and the fact the award is quite low, obviously the employee has contributed to their own demise, even though the employer didn't follow the process, and that's probably why. But we always, I'd say we've never done an interview, Jerry, without mentioning the importance of the contract and the handbook. So let's keep with the very good standard we have, because ultimately that's what this all comes back to. What does it say in the contract and what does it say in the staff handbook? So again, emphasising the importance of making sure that the employee knows, look, this is the standard that's accepted. It's not okay to say or do or, you know, not achieve a certain standard of performance. And in turn, at least you're managing things in the correct process in line with your own policies and procedures. But tricky though, nonetheless.
Yeah.
I mean, I always empathise with, you know, small businesses. It doesn't matter whether you've only one employee or you've 101 or 1,001. It's the same obligation. So it's always just important to kind of press pause. Don't ever react in the moment.
In the moment,
and then try and do your best to handle it as objectively as you can.
Okay, perfect, Caroline. That's all the time we have for this week. But thanks very much for joining us again.
A pleasure as always. Thanks so much, Jerry.
Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite, and we've lots of queries that have come in from listeners. We'll get to those next month with Caroline. So thanks for sending them in. We'll pass them on to her in the meantime.